You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Tensions between the U.S. and Iran have escalated sharply this year. First, the U.S. said Iran was behind attacks on oil tankers in the Gulf over the summer. Iran has denied involvement. And more recently, the U.S., along with France, Germany, and the U.K., have blamed Iran for an attack on two oil facilities in Saudi Arabia a couple weekends ago. The Saudis, who also blame Iran, said the drone and missile strikes took out about half of the country's oil production. In response, Iran says it had nothing to do with the attacks and warned the U.S. and its allies against a military response. In a speech to the United Nations General Assembly yesterday, President Trump pledged to keep squeezing Iran economically until they give up their quest for nuclear weapons.
All nations have a duty to act. No responsible government should subsidize Iran's bloodlust. As long as Iran's menacing behavior continues, sanctions will not be lifted. They will be tightened.
In an interview scheduled to be aired this weekend on Fox News, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said America supports terrorism in the Middle East and called on the U.S. to lift sanctions. Ali Aboudalebi is a professor of political science at UW-Eau Claire. His areas of expertise include Iran, Middle East politics, U.S. Middle East policy, and Islam. He just returned from a two-month stay in Iran. Ali, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, before we get to the big picture, I want you to take us to Iran. You were there at this very tense time between the two countries. What were you hearing from people there in the country?
Well, actually, from outside, things portrayed to be desperate. But while you're there, Iranians, for the most part, are living their lives, and life is as normal as it can be, with the exception that there is a lot of pressure on wages and prices. And most people, they try to have a couple of jobs, or if they cannot afford housing, they stay with their parents and families and relatives. They improvise, so to speak, to cut down on the cost of living. And when it comes to their daily lives and expenditures, they have to choose between what they can afford and what they want. So they have become choosier. Choosing in terms of what they pick. So most people, I guess by implication, they don't eat as much meat as they used to, or they choose for lower quality fruits or products in the market. But nevertheless, market is full of products. Everything you want is there. There is no shortage whatsoever. The problem is that the prices are really high, especially if you are an employee, work for the government, or if you are a wage earner. Your fundamental monthly income doesn't meet your monthly expenditures, particularly when it comes to housing. The housing prices, whether you're renting or you want to buy, they're so very much expensive that you need at least two income earner households in order to be able to make the rent and have a decent life.
And is this in part or in large part because of the U.S.-led sanctions and other economic pressure on Iran?
Well, the Iranian government insists this is the main cause. And indeed, this is a big part of it. There's no doubt that the Iranian economy can do better with better management, better banking system, and less corruption. There's no doubt. But nevertheless, sanctions have had a drastic impact because partially some of the corruption that we see in the economy, society, is because of sanctions. That the government and the companies and different organizations, they try to bypass the sanctions. And in the midst of this, there are people who use their position in government or position of power to enrich themselves. A simple example is the currency market. Since Iran has two kind of exchange rate adopted by the government, one for the importers of essential commodities and one in the market, and the difference between the two is tremendous, 300% price differences. Those who can afford, they acquire dollar and they sell it in the open market and become millionaires and billionaires over a matter of days and weeks. So there is corruption, there is manipulation, and there is opportunity for for smuggling, kind of bypassing the sanction, increasing the level of corruption. So sanctions has some major impact, I would argue.
Ali, I won't ask you to sum up the entirety of Iranian public opinion here, but what did you hear from people? Did they say, oh, our government and the corruption and the troubles they're leading us into internationally, they're to blame for these economic inconveniences, or the Americans and their sanctions are to blame?
For the most part, there's a lot of complaint about the performance of government, and corruption really bothers Iranians. I mean, as soon as there are corruption news in the papers, et cetera, everybody complain about it. At the same time, Iranians, they have come to appreciate what they have achieved in the last 40 years. Simply national pride, kind of being independent, and they look at the area of nuclear achievements and defense achievements, nanotechnology, agriculture, some industry. There's a sense of national pride among people, especially young people, who by far are a lot more educated now than before revolution. So despite all the differences and despite many fingers pointed at government or America or other forces, they don't want drastic changes through intervention or revolution, or so to speak. They want changes from within. And government, of course, bombard them with the point that much of your problem is because of sanctions. So they do indeed blame both ends. And the ones who can afford it, they try to emigrate, especially among the young people. But the fact is that Iran has 82, 83 million people, and people cannot all leave. And they can do a lot better should the sanctions be lifted. I've argued in my writing and my discussion that if the sanctions are lifted, Iran has enough resources and manpower to go through a major economic change that would impact Iran and the region within the next 10, 20 years. But that all has to do with sanctions and politics.
Ali Aboudalebi is with us, professor of political science at UW-Eau Claire, just back from a stay in Iran. We're looking at what's going on in Iran and between the Iran and the U.S. And let's zoom out now, Ali, to look at the latest tensions. This drone strike on Saudi Arabian oil facilities. A lot of countries, Europe and the United States included, European countries and the United States included, blaming Iran for these attacks. What do we know about Iranian complicity in this attack?
Well, we know what we hear in the media. I mean, obviously, the Iranian made weaponry which hit the installations. There is no doubt about that. But nevertheless, in terms of whether they came from Iran or from the Houthis, people can debate this. On one hand, of course, if you argue they came from Iran, and then the question is raised, how come all this sophisticated weaponry and American bases in the region could not detect these 10 and drones and the missiles, which is not a pleasant question. If you argue that they came from the south, from Houthi Yemen, similar question can apply. I do understand that United States and, of course, Europeans now blame Iran because of the nature of the attack. And, you know, I'm not going to argue that it was not initiated from Iran or it did. I think the question is the wrong question. The better question is, how can we de-escalate and go back to the normal situation? Because obviously, as everybody knows, a war is to no one's benefit, whether Iran or United States or even Saudi Arabia or Gulf states. So the better question is how to de-escalate, and the answers are not that complex. We need to deal with the question of Yemen and the war in Yemen, and of course with the United States sanctions. Without kind of defacing ourselves, United States and Iran can find or should find ways to go back to the agreement, so to speak. At least that is Iranian demand. Should the United States come back to the nuclear agreement, then many good things happen. And Iranians have signaled that they're actually ready to amend some of the clauses in the agreement to the satisfaction of the United States. should the U.S. come on board. But, of course, that would be a major benefit to Iran. So the question is, how can we de-escalate and how can we address the war in Yemen, which basically has turned into quagmire for Saudi Arabia and tremendous death and misery for Yemen. And I think these are legitimate points to be to raise if you're talking about this attack on Saudi Arabia, because the attack did not come in a vacuum. It came from within a context, and the context is Yemen war and Iranian the sanction on Iran.
Is it that simple to untangle the war in Yemen? As you say, the Saudi Arabian government heavily involved there, this war going on for a long time, Iran supporting the other side, bigger international players having their own roles, including the United States. How do you, we've talked about this a little before, how do you untangle that at this point?
I think the United States have a very big sway, so to speak, over Saudi Arabia. We could be persuasive that it's better for Saudi Arabia and the Persian Gulf states, mainly, you know, United Arab Emirates and Bahrain, to come up with new understanding. Recall that even the Gulf Arab states, they are not getting along among themselves. You know, Saudis and UAE and Bahrain, they went against one of their fellow partners, Qatar, and Qatar, that pushed Qatar more toward Iran. The war is not serving Saudi interests, except they're wasting the resources buying weapons. And if when you look at Yemen, Yemen actually had civil war in the 1960s, which led to Yemen again split as becoming two countries. And then again, Saudi Arabia did intervene, as well as Egypt. And that was within the Cold War conflict. In the 1990s, Yemen became a country, but never was able to pick up his own weight and become a kind of sovereign state, living under the shadow of Saudi Arabia. And because of conflict and ethnic issues, all that in Yemen, the war started. But Saudi intervention, I understand why Saudi did this, but had not turned successful. I think through negotiation, we can come up with this resolution agreeable to both Saudi Arabia and Iran and the United States. Of course, Saudis are concerned should there be peace in Yemen, they may ally themselves with Iran. But there are mechanisms to make sure that it's not going necessarily be to the detriment of Saudi Arabia.
Now, France and Britain's leaders have urged President Rouhani of Iran to meet with President Trump. Iran says no one-on-one talks until the U.S. returns to the nuclear deal. The U.S. had left the deal in effect a while back. So do you see worthwhile negotiations happening anytime soon?
Not unfortunately. I mean, if this is the case, that is, Prime Minister Zarif has mentioned that, you know, how can we trust American signature and promises and come back to negotiation if they broke the first agreement to begin with. And, you know, we are not dealing with the American government, or we are dealing with the American state or country, as well as the United Nations Security Council. I think these are legitimate points raised by Foreign Minister Zarif. The United States, of course, cannot simply go back to the agreement without losing face. But I think behind-the-scenes negotiations can open the way. We have to water it down, the idea that the conflict is not going to serve anybody, that the United States may go back to a nuclear agreement should there be some changes to the agreement. And Iranians already signaled that they're willing to include new clauses or new points in the clauses, kind of addressing U.S. concern. I think that is an opening that Trump administration has to say, okay, we didn't blink, they blink, they wanted to renegotiate and enter into negotiation and lift up the sanctions. And once that happened, then we can also pressure Iran on their missile program if we want. But you cannot just pressure on missile and nuclear program and expect cooperation while Iran is really suffering under sanctions.
Ali, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
It is my pleasure. Thank you.
That's Ali Aboutaleibi, professor of political science at UW-Eau Claire, with us to talk about the latest news between Iran and the U.S. and to tell us what he saw in his recent 2-month stay in Iran.